Are you troubled by strange hockey trades in the middle of the night?
Do you experience feelings of dread about NHL free agency?
Have you or your family ever seen a New York Islanders game?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your mobile device and subscribe to Lighthouse Hockey Podcast from SB Nation today.
Our courteous and efficient hosts are ready to serve all of your Islander needs and worries.
Lighthouse Hockey Podcasts for New York Islanders fans.
Hello and welcome to another episode of From Complex to Queens. I'm Ken Lavin. I'm joined here again by Lucas Vlahos. And yeah, this is this week's installment of From Complex to Queens. How you doing, Lucas?
I'm okay. Steve has abandoned us once again.
Yeah, Steve, please come home. Yeah. It's time.
we need our Steve.
That we do.
Yeah.
Yeah, Steve's out of town again. I think he's either heading home today or tomorrow from Tennessee. He went down to see the Kingsport Mets of the Appalachian League. So we should be bringing you plenty of content, I guess, or discussions of their roster, which includes some very interesting people, including podcast concern Wilfred Ostadio.
Ah, yes, of course.
La Tortuga 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah, unfortunately, he's looking about as good as the movie right now. Which, for those of you who are not actually familiar with the movie, is not good.
It's an extreme skill set, to say the least.
It'd be nice if we had his brother to at least compare him against, but he's hurt still, so.
Yeah, that makes me sad. The league just isn't the same without.
Yeah, it wasn't ready. It wasn't ready for the Tortuga.
Before his time. Mm-hmm. All right, so I guess we should do the affiliate records and stuff.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, so the Syracuse Mets went 4-2 this week. They're now 64-61 on the season, which is tied for second with the Buffalo Bisons in the International League North Division. They're two games behind the first place Scranton Wilkes-Barre Rail Riders, and
is it Wilkes-Barre?
I think that's how they always said it on The Office.
Crap! I've been mispronouncing it for like. Is it really six years now?
I could be wrong, but that's just I watch a lot of The Office.
All right, I'll take your word for it.
So hopefully they did their homework. But moving on, the Binghamton Rumble Ponies went 1-6 on the week, so not great. Yeah, they're now 60-64 on the year, 25-35 in the second half, which puts them in last place in the Eastern League Eastern Division. And they're 9.5 games out of first place with an elimination number of 3. So their season looks to be ending pretty soon.
Kaput.
The St. Lucie Mets similarly went 1-5 on the week. They're now 67-57 on the year, 35-23 in the second half, which is good for second place in the Florida State League South Division. But they're still 6.5 games behind the Charlotte Stone Crabs for first place, and their elimination number is now 1, despite being one of the better teams in the Mets organization.
Getting to that time of year.
Yep. It's kind of hard to... They also lost, I think got swept by Charlotte, who's the Rays affiliate that currently has Wander Franco.
Yeah, that's kind of a competitive advantage. You know?
Yeah, having the unquestioned best prospect in baseball.
It's not fair, man.
Yep. The Columbia Fireflies went 4-3 on the week. They're now 49-72 on the year. They are 25-30 in the second half, which is good for fifth place in the South Atlantic League Southern Division. And they're 6.5 games behind the Asheville Tourists. The Brooklyn Cyclones went 2-5 on the week, including a win in the game that was continued today after it was suspended yesterday due to extreme fog. They're now 33-27 on the year, good for third place in the New York Penn League McNamara division. And they're 2.5 games behind the Hudson Valley Renegades for first place. The Kingsport Mets went 4-2 this week. They're now 28-29 on the season, which is good for third place in the Appy League West Division. And they're 1.5 games behind the Johnson City Cardinals for first place in the division. And the GCL Mets went 2-5 on the week. They're now 23-22 on the year, good for second place in the GCL East Division. So, and they're 3.5 games out of first place.
Not the best week ever.
Yeah, not great for most. Kingsport was a nice surprise, but and they're also in a weak division, so they're kind of clawing their way back into a playoff race, which is nice. Hopefully, whatever interesting dudes are still in the GCL will get promoted out.
Yeah, we get more Francisco Alvarez bets.
Yep, that would be cool.
Which I guess is a nice consolation prize for. Consecra was never healthy, and Hernandez probably isn't making it back this year.
Yeah, right? They shut him down, I think.
Damn.
So it was a hamstring or something like that.
This is kind of the shitty thing with a 50-game season. Like,
yeah, you get one really bad like health issue, and you know, your whole season's could be done because there's just not that many games.
Right. I mean, not even like a season-ending surgery thing. Just I pulled my muscle really badly, and your season is kaput.
Yep.
Well, we'll still probably have them close to the top 10 because this farm system sucks, but that's a conversation for the offseason.
Yeah, very true. They'll probably, I think they're definitely still top 30, but yeah.
Oh, I mean, no, they're probably top 15. At least Hernandez is to me. I mean, this farm system's bad.
Yeah, it's not great, Bob.
Yeah, not great. Anyway, we should talk about a couple of the players that were good this week.
Yeah, there were at least two.
including one who I lobby for promotion constantly.
Yep.
That would be Dilson Pickles Herrera, a.k.a. What's his other nickname? I know someone has dropped it before.
There's my favorite was from FX Carden in the comments, and that was Dillweed Hernia.
All right.
That might be my favorite nickname for anyone. Not right, just we're gonna go with that.
So Dillweed Hernia. So this is his second time winning our prestigious award here. The first time was week 11. This week he pretty definitively stated his case to be promoted. He hit 500, 545, 900, and that is his slugging, not his OPS. So a good week. That's a 266 weighted. That included 10 singles, a couple doubles, a couple homers, a couple walks, no steals. He's been bouncing around various positions at St. Lucie. I think he's seen a little bit of first base, lots of second base, some left field, some third base, which sounds like a piece the Mets could use right about now, Ken.
Yep. We're going to discuss this probably a lot more later in the show, but the fact that he can play, you know, he can play an infield position in second base and can also kind of play the outfield. Kind of a perfect fit.
Yeah, let's put it this way. Like, he's probably not a worse outfielder than J.D. Davis.
Yeah, and he's definitely not a worse hitter than Aaron Altair.
Yeah, we'll save that discussion for later. So we'll keep this bit on Herrera brief, but he mashed this week, and the Mets should promote him.
Also, he's just a big doof.
Yeah, we've had this conversation at least five times already. He's still a real prospect. He's 25. He had a serious shoulder injury that explains the couple years of struggles. He very well could be a decent bench bat slash second slash third division second base player, second base starter.
And we're at the part of the season where, like, you can't be giving away at bats. You know,
especially in the Mets,
you're in a playoff race. Exactly, and you're coming from behind in a playoff race. Like every at bat matters.
And your bench is trash. Your bench was already a mediocre point until everyone got injured. And realistically, we shouldn't expect anything from Lowry, or I hate to say it, but probably not from Nimmo either, because there's just not enough time for them to get back up to speed at this point. So. Yep. which sucks. Like, and I might expect maybe something from Nimmo, but not immediately. Certainly not at the end of like a 10-day rehab.
Yeah, and I don't know if you could expect Nimmo to be, you know, even in my like wildest dreams, could you expect him to be good? You know,
right?
He's missed a lot of time with a serious neck injury.
Yep. Like that's not a joke. I could see him contributing like late September once he's had time to. The Mets kind of need someone right now.
Yeah, and they're currently giving way too many at bats to, you know.
We can talk about that. We'll look at who they're actually giving these at bats to.
I'd also like to make a point that Dilson Herrera has a career 91 WRC plus. That's really not that bad. It's really not that bad.
What's Aaron Altair's career where he runs career to plus?
Yeah, and he's got way, way more big league time. So
negative two. Yep. I'm gonna actually look this up now. Oh, I almost closed one of my tabs. I saved it. Aaron Altair.
I think he doesn't have like 6 hits on the year.
Yeah, and 2 of them are dongs. I mean, he hit that dong in his first at bat. His weighted on the season is, I said negative 2. That was too high. It's negative 20.
He literally has 5 hits. 3 of them for extra bases. But that's still not great, Bob.
His career is a 90, but still, that's a yikes. Anyway.
Yep.
Moving on, our pitcher of the week is someone who probably will not and should not be called up, despite how fun it would be, and that is Mickey Yanis. Yanis? Whatever. So the knuckleballer, always a fan of a knuckleballer, praise be to Dickey. He had 2 starts. He lost both of them, but through no fault of his own. He threw 13 innings. He had a 0.69 ERA, which is pretty nice. Only walked 2, struck out a whopping 22. And got a little bit screwed by his defense, who gave up 3 unearned runs behind him. So for those of you who aren't super familiar with Yanis, he went to Allen Hancock College for a year and then went to Cal State Bakersfield, which is something of a baseball powerhouse last time I checked. Was a 44th round pick of the Rays, then got released in 2011. At which point he started throwing a knuckleball in independent league. He was in the Frontier League for a couple years. And then moved to the Atlantic League in 2014, stayed there for 2015, where he's actually a teammate of Rich Hill, not nearly as successful as Rich Hill to date, but notable. And then he signed a minor league contract with the Mets in 2015. He's been kind of kicking around the low minors for most of that contract between Advanced A and AA. Now the last couple of years, he's seen more time in AAA. Vegas hasn't been kind to him, but Syracuse, been a little bit better, and he seems like a decent, Syracuse has been horrible to him with a 23 ERA, but that's just this season, so
yeah, it's six innings, it's fine.
Yeah, it's not that much. He's been quite good at Binghamton this year. If the Mets were out of it, I would be lobbying for Mickey Yanis to get some major league time, because
I would say I don't know, we've had comparable weird guys come through, like I don't know, PJ Conwin has been up at various points.
Oh god,
I don't know if anybody seriously thought PJ Conwin had a big league future.
The Dodgers claimed him, which was the strangest thing. Because, like, you expect the Dodgers to do smart things, and it's like, wait, why do you want this guy?
I don't know.
it did make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, they gave up on him after, like, a week.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
RIP TJ Conwin, PJ Conwin. We wish you well.
Yeah. I mean, Yanis is fun. I've always thought it'd be interesting to have a knuckleball reliever, because that would really throw people off.
Oh, yeah. I can't imagine how you would hit that. Especially, like, imagine facing DeGrom for, like, 7 innings.
Right, exactly.
The only thing is, like, if he doesn't have it, he's really not going to have it.
That's true. I mean, this goes back to another more analytic idea I've always wanted to talk about, that being that you should set up like a pitch FX system in your bullpen. So during and then you could train models to predict during warmups whether a guy has it or not. Like, that'd be a really cool
application. Yeah, like how far he would, you know, maybe like how closely he matches his ideal release point.
Right, exactly. Right. Or you just learn, like, what are the characteristics of how he – you need some training data. Like, what does he look like when he before he has a good outing? What does he look like before he has a bad outing?
Right.
But if you could somehow pull it off and understand when your knuckleballer had it, and then you follow up a guy pumping 100-mile-an-hour gas and razor blade sliders with – then you say, all right, come hit these 80-mile-an-hour knuckleballs.
Yep.
What are you going to do?
Yeah, no, I can't imagine how you would do that. How do you even approach that?
I mean,
just praying, just, like.
It's kind of tough for any of us to understand because our approach against any major league pitch would be to just pray.
I'd probably just start crying.
Yeah. You see that kid at the Little League World Series who crouched down to have no strikes?
Yeah, that would be me.
I'd be
on the ground.
But knuckleballs are super hard to control. Anyway, I hope Giannis gets some. I'm probably mispronouncing his name because I can't decide how to pronounce it, but that's okay. I hope he gets some major league time eventually. I hope the knuckleball never dies because it's truly a lot of fun.
It's one of the last, like, really weird physics tricks left in baseball.
It's one of, like, the old timey things that is actually, like, still good.
Yeah, right. That can still be effective for, like, actual right. masters at it.
Right. Like, know? Bunting, not so good anymore. Base stealing, meh. If you could pitch well with a good knuckleball, sure.
Yep.
Good for Giannis.
I'd also like to point out that he set the record for most wins in Binghamton franchise history earlier this year, which is not necessarily a record you want to hold, but...
Yeah, it probably means he just spent too much time there.
But... You know, good for him. He'll always be one of the greats in franchise history, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, he's the kind of guy who I wish minor league pensions existed for.
Yeah, like, it's weird. Like, any guy who... Really, anybody who finds their way back into affiliated ball after getting released and spending time out in the wilderness, I root for hard. It's like, that's such a hard thing to do. It's so cool when it actually happens, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
it's why I don't love Drew Gagneau, but you know.
Yeah. I mean, I think I wrote, was it Gagneau or someone else? I think it might have been Gagneau. Like, I wrote his season recap last season, and the whole point was like, look, he's bad. I don't want him on the Mets next year. Probably a sign that things have gone wrong. But like, good for you, dude. You made it.
Yep.
Like you've gone from that random sandlot as a kid saying I'm going to be a major leaguer to actually standing on a major league mound.
Yep. Same with Chris Mazza. With
PJ Conlon.
PJ Conlon. I don't know if he was an indie ball fine. Josh Smoker was.
Like, he was like a random guy from Ireland, basically, right?
That was he moved to California as like a child and then was drafted, I think, in 2015 maybe.
Right.
But anyway, yeah, it's always nice when always nice when a guy works his way back into affiliated ball from like I said, the indie league wilderness. So hopefully he makes it. That'd be cool.
Yep. Absolutely.
All right, you want to take a break and then
let's take our first break and we'll come back and do things
about the depth or lack thereof, as Steve put. So, all right, we'll be back after this.
When you start losing your hair, there's no magical cure, but there is a way to stop hair loss from happening in the first place. It's called Keeps, and it's a treatment that's proven up to 90% effective at reducing and stopping further hair loss. You don't have to go to the doctor's office or stand in line at the pharmacy for a prescription. You'll visit a doctor online, and they'll send the medication right to you in a discreet package. And with Keeps starting at just $10 a month, you don't have to go broke to avoid going bald. 2 out of 3 guys will experience some form of male pattern baldness by the time they're 35. So prevention is key. The sooner you start using Keeps, the more hair you'll save. Nearly 100,000 men trust Keeps for their hair loss prevention medication. They have more 5-star reviews than any of their competitors. So take action now and visit keeps.com/SBNation. With our special offer, you'll receive your first month of treatment for free at keeps.com/SBNation. That's KEEPS.com/SBNation.
Hey, Hey, I'm Spencer Hall.
I'm Holly Anderson.
I'm Ryan Nanny.
I'm Jason Kirk, and we're the hosts of the Shutdown Fullcast, your Avengers of College Football podcast. It says here in the script I'm to riff on what that means, and basically what I mean is it's all already spoiled.
Every Tuesday, we talk about everything from cooking disasters to pro wrestling to unfashionable pants we wore in middle school.
We also do talk about college football every now and then, like mascot fights, announcers fleeing the booth early, and unfashionable pants that coaches wear now.
If you want to take college football exactly as seriously as it should be taken, subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app.
Welcome back to From Complex to Queens. Again, I'm Ken Lavin. I'm joined by Lucas Vlahos. And we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about the internal options for, you know, guys who can come up and help the Mets down the stretch this season while they try to, you know, claim a wild card spot.
Give me pickles.
Yes.
Or give me death.
Yeah, I would very much, nothing would make me happier than Return of the Dill. So I've named at least two prospect reports Return of the Dill.
Jesus.
And both times, I think there's like this random Twitter account that's like something about dill pickles, and he's liked the tweets both times. So that's cool.
Is it actually an account about pickles or the player?
I think it's somebody, it's an account that literally searches for like words associated with pickles. Twitter is a weird place.
Fuck. What? Who has time for that?
Who had time to program a bot?
Yeah. Who had time to program a bot to do this?
I'll send it to you later. It's
Jesus.
Weird.
All right.
Weird. But yeah,
that aside, I think Dilson is the number one guy on this list. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think he makes by far the most sense. Considering again, like they have like a lot of up and down guys internally. You know, I think if they're going to bring up much pitching help, it should really be guys other teams are giving up on, like Brad Brocks of the world.
Yeah, that was a good pickup.
And then there'll be other ones like that. You know, teams are still probably going to be cutting guys as they try to optimize their 40-man rosters down the stretch, you know?
Yeah, and like pending free agents. I wonder, like with the new trade line, I don't know how familiar you are with basketball, but a lot of like pending free agents in basketball ask for their release or a buyout, and this creates a whole buyout market post-trade deadline. And I wonder if this is like going to be the new paradigm with the earlier trade deadline where like some of these vets say I want to be released. Now I don't know, I'm not exactly familiar with how the compensatory formulas work in basketball, but I don't think it's tied to any sort of qualifying offer,
right?
Which means maybe it won't quite translate to baseball. But the guys like Brack, who I guess he was released from a contender, I'm trying to think of a good example here off the top of my head who might fit into this category.
There was a lot of talk about Cody Allen for a while.
Oh, no. Please, no.
Who's the other one? Holland was another one.
Yeah.
Who a lot of people were clamoring for. The point being that there are pitchers around who are going to get DFA'd. Like,
absolutely.
And who will be available on waivers to the Mets. So, however, the Mets also have a very bad bench right now.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a really difficult thing to have when you're trying to make up ground in a wild card race that has at least four teams vying for two spots.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you have to be very good if you want to, or you have to play very well if you want to do that. Just because there's four teams vying for two spots.
Right, right.
It's a lot of moving parts. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, and these teams, most for the most part, have better offenses than the Mets. Like, the Brewers have a really good offense. The Cubs have a really good offense. I mean, the Mets have better starting pitching, obviously, but I feel like, and I think there have been some big articles written about this, with the expansion of bullpen and the expansion of bullpen usage, it's almost as if there's a new team that's been added, and so many teams are therefore struggling with this thinner pitching talent distribution across the league. Yeah. And I wonder if the fact that the Mets are relatively stronger in that department, that might mean their issues are more low-hanging fruit, right? It's easier for the Mets to fix their bench than it is for the Cubs to, you know, fix the tire fire that is their bullpen, or the Brewers to fix the rotation, or the Phillies to fix both.
Yeah, that's a good point. They, you know, there's a lot of good on both sides of the ball for the Mets, you know. Mm-hmm. Offensively, there's a lot of good. Alonso's mm-hmm. very good. McNeil hopefully comes back, but he's very good, you know. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they have more pitching than a lot of these teams, I think, is a definite advantage, you know. Mm-hmm. However, you still need to upgrade where you can upgrade.
Absolutely. Maybe not rostering Aaron Altair would be a good upgrade.
Yeah, which brings me to, I guess, how I'd like to start this discussion by looking at the 40-man roster, and I've found five spots where they could very easily, you know, DFA somebody or, you know, free up a roster spot if they need to claim one of these guys. So mm-hmm. I guess we'll start with Eric Hanhold. He's had a very rough year at AAA. He even got demoted to AA for a little while.
I really thought he'd be one of the better arms they traded for. I wonder how much of his struggles are just the AAA ball, but yeah, you could probably DFA him. And
probably not lose him, you know?
Yeah. Like, there'd be guys I'd DFA first, but sure.
And we'll get to a few of them. One of them being like Paul Sewald. They've done it like two or three times. We're going to say this is a co spot with Tim Peterson, who was recently who had this spot before he was DFA'd for Sewald earlier this week. But have been DFA'd multiple times and have managed to stay in the organization mm-hmm. multiple times. Like, you can upgrade that spot fairly easily and not lose anything.
Absolutely.
Brooks Pounders is another guy who
I forgot he was on the team.
Same. As much as we all love the quarter pounder. My friend Joe loves that nickname. you know, they took a flyer on him. He served a purpose for a little while, but again, like, if you need the roster spot, it's worth upgrading.
Absolutely.
The aforementioned Chris Mazza, who was literally pitching in the Pacific Association as recently as last season.
Yep.
You can, you know, I think I'm speaking for the podcast and saying we like Chris Mazza a lot. Mm-hmm. It's an incredible story that he was able to go, you know, basically up like seven rungs of independent league baseball and made it to the big leagues in less than a year. That's, you know,
right.
Remarkable. But again, if you're in a playoff race and you need a 40-man spot, you could probably keep him in your organization and not lose anything and upgrade that spot. And then back to Aaron Altair.
One more I want to add to this. Franklin Killamy still isn't on the 60-day DL.
So I think that one has a reason.
It's for service time reasons.
Yeah, I don't think it's a particularly good reason. Yeah, that would start his service clock. Or his
option. Who cares? Clock.
But also, yeah, who cares? Like,
he's 25.
He's 25.
24, excuse me.
So the season in question would be his either age or 30 or 31, right?
And he's probably a reliever.
Yeah.
I mean, you're right. Like, let's DFA all these guys first.
Yeah, so my point being that there are, like, better options before you think about doing that, mm-hmm. I guess.
Absolutely. No, that's fair.
But also, yeah, that's also small potatoes. Like, so if you can add, I don't know, say you want to add three pitchers down the stretch to see if you can catch lightning in a bottle.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can very easily do it, I guess, is the point of this portion.
It feels like we've had a bit of a drought in terms of buyout pitchers. Like, there was a kind of a spate of them, and now last week or so, have we gotten any? Or I don't know if anyone else who's gotten bought out recently.
Yeah, I don't know. I know the Nats brought in, like, four guys shortly after the deadline. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if there's been a bunch since.
Right. And I may just put Doolittle on the DL. So I'm not, like, the Nationals are not exactly a bullpen I want to be picking over the parts from.
Yeah, no. Like, but I mean, yeah, as evidenced by the fact that they were looking for a bunch of precisely this type of dude.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Tony Sipp, isn't Tony Sipp still out there?
Ooh.
Yeah, like Tony Sipp would be a good pickup for this sort of exercise, right? And looking at the 25-man roster, I'd rather roster Tony Sipp than
Tony Sipp was one of the guys the Nats picked up.
They released him and they brought him back? Okay, I didn't realize that. Was
designated for assignment on August. Oh, no, wait, okay. He's just still in their org, I guess?
Did he accept a minor league assignment or something?
Maybe.
Huh. Right, but someone like that, like someone who isn't great, right now the Mets have an 8-man bullpen, right? And that 8-man bullpen includes Paul Sewald and Walter Lockett.
Ugh.
Both of them are really, really bad.
Yeah, you can upgrade those guys fairly easily, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
That's like not, like Tony Sipp would be a clear upgrade over both of them.
According to Roto-World, Sipp was released on August 5th, so...
Okay, yeah, so he's probably kicking around somewhere.
Yeah. And, like, he's got an ugly ERA, and, like, look, these are the kind of acquisitions that I think you really need to consult with your coaching staff with. Like, they did a really good job with Brock, because supposedly, like, he was tipping his pitches, and they figured out that they could fix it, and now he looks decent again. And maybe Sipp is a guy that the coaching staff just doesn't have any confidence in. But any number of these arms floating around out there.
Yeah, there's like four or five guys who are in the organization who I have no confidence in.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, right? Like, that I'd throw away and risk losing without any second thought. Like, it can't get any worse.
Yep.
If it gets to a point where we're sweating over losing Paul Sewald, the season's already fucked. So
something bizarre has happened.
Something is that horrifically wrong. The bullpen got collapsed. There's been a cave in. They're all trapped in there and they're not available for the game. But Paul Sewald was in the locker room and we desperately need him. That's the only possible scenario where we could possibly need Paul Sewald or Walter Lockett.
Yep.
They love Lockett internally, unfortunately, which is...
It's another Pakoda darling. But, yep. I don't get it.
I really don't get it looking at Lockett.
But yeah, so I guess now let's take a look at some internal reinforcements, I guess, that since we've established that they have 40-man spots they can use.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we'll break it down into three categories. Starting pitchers, if they need a spot start going down the stretch.
Yep.
Relievers and position players. So I guess we'll start with the starting pitchers. Lucas, I would really like to see Harold Gonzalez pitch for the Mets this year.
Oh, boy. This was like a joke in, like, I don't know, our second or third episode that, hey, Harold's only, like, eighth on the depth chart.
Yep, and then they traded, like, three guys between him and the big leagues.
No. Look, like, Harold Gonzalez is cool. He dresses and does his hair like Mini Pedro or something, right? Like, whatever. He's not good.
He's not good, but is he any worse than Walker Lockett?
No, probably not. And
is he any worse than Corey Oswalt?
He might be worse than Corey Oswalt.
Maybe. That's entirely possible. I would love to find out.
As a spot start, fine. I'd almost rather they do a bullpen day or just, like, give one of these guys a three-inning start.
I feel like a Harold Gonzalez start would very quickly turn into a bullpen day.
Yeah.
I think if you're having Harold start in a playoff race, you're not giving him much rope.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, I certainly hope not. That said, like, Steven Matz is made out of glass, so you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, and, like, weird things happen on the schedule. Somebody could wake up feeling shitty one day.
Mm-hmm.
There could be valid reasons to need a guy to give you, you know, four innings.
Syndergaard could get hand, foot, and mouth disease again. Or whatever it was.
He's got to stop drinking out of that well.
Yeah, man. Like, you know, like, fine. If it has to be Harold Gonzalez, I'm fine with that. It will probably be Walker Lockett.
Yeah, and I think it's fine within the fudge factor. I just think...
Harold would be more fun.
I like Harold. I've always liked Harold.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone likes Harold. Is he on the 40 right now?
No, so they'd have to add him.
They'd have to add him.
Which is probably why we don't see him this year. So.
Right. Well, I mean, they probably have to add him after the season anyway. I think. I'm not 100% sure probably. On that, but it's coming up to that point. So, yeah, I'd have no problem with getting Harold up here. It'd be fun.
I guess you want to move on to relievers?
Yeah, let's do the relievers, because I think this is the more relevant section.
So I listed Riley Gilliam first. I'm not sure why.
That's an interesting choice. I was going to ask you why you did that.
I don't, you know, I've always liked the curveball a little bit, but I don't like the pitcher that much.
Right.
Again, I just think he's arguably of the same quality as all of the shuttle guys.
Oh, Lord. He's been horrific at AAA.
Yeah, but aren't all of them?
That's true, honestly. And the AAA ball. You know, we were so excited to get out of Vegas because we could actually evaluate our pitchers, and then the ball happened, and now we still can't evaluate our pitchers.
Yeah. But at least, you know, the ball was juiced in Vegas this year, too.
Oh, my God. That would be it's a nightmare. Riley Gilliam is probably better than Paul Sewald. Yeah. I could buy that.
But the fact that we have to qualify it by saying probably.
Right. Not... I mean, this is something that I always wish the Mets did more of, though, is churn and check out these guys. Like, you should be willing to look.
Yeah.
Not just... keep running out the same guys over and over again who you know already.
Yep.
Also, you also have, Donnie Hart listed. So they just claimed him and sent him back to the minors.
I know literally nothing about Donnie Hart.
Yeah, I mean, he's like a random lefty. Like, sure, if they need a lefty, whatever. But they have Wilson and... he's a random lefty, and he'd be the second lefty I choose. Because I'd rather look at Daniel Zamora.
Yeah, I always liked Zamora. Ultimately, with Zamora, I don't think the slider is good enough where he can get away with just throwing it, and I don't think the fastball is going to keep people off the slider enough.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But that slider is hell on lefties.
Yeah, I think...
It's such a small role, I feel like you can get away with it, you know?
Mm-hmm. He might be someone come postseason time, he might be someone I definitely want on the roster then, because... You can shuttle, I guess it'd be Mats to the bullpen, and then then you really have no need of Walker Lockett, and then you could put Zamora on there as just an extra, we need a lefty out right now guy. And I kind of trust him to do that.
Yeah, he's had stretches where he's been pretty good, and it's not like the sample size is going to be ever very big.
Right. Right, of course.
So the fact that he's been able to have it like a good week in the big leagues before, you know, not a bad sign.
I mean, he struck out Bryce Harper once, so that's something.
I did. I saw that with my own two eyes.
Yeah, that was fun. And then you put Matt Blackham here, and I want to hear your thoughts on him.
I was just flipping through the roster and
I saw
his name, know he's been on our lists at times. Mm-hmm. I have very few thoughts on Matt Blackham.
The dude can strike people out for sure. Just a little wild, which always makes everyone anxious. I'd give him a shot too. Like, none of these options are great, unfortunately.
Yeah, when it comes to guys like you know, your churn guys, I'd almost always rather see the new guy than the guy
absolutely.
I've seen 35 times.
This is,
you know,
and I know, like, I know our Slack has had some arguments with Dan Szymborski on Twitter, but one of the points, let's not get into that. One of the points he always makes that I really appreciate is that teams don't churn enough, right? Like, he gets on the Royals, for instance, of calling up these retread infielders for no reason. Like, it makes no sense. Teams should be willing to experiment more. They should be willing to play guys out of position when you're out of the race. Bring up a new guy when you need a bullpen arm. Like, don't just keep bringing up the same retreads. Try something new, because you never, on that 1% chance, there's something, right? Like,
Yep.
Teams need to roll that dice more often.
He's also having a very good year now that I look at it, Matt Blackham.
Yeah, absolutely. Like he,
between AA and AAA, he's got an ERA just under 2.5, 50 innings pitched, and 67 Ks against 26 walks. That's all good.
Yeah, I mean, the AAA...
the walks are a little high, but, you know... Yeah.
The AAA peripherals are really, really bad, but it's 11 innings.
Yeah, no.
And the ball, so... I had him as like a sleeper coming into this season. It's also always fun to get guys who are like 5'10 coming up because it reinforces the fact that baseball is every man's sport. And yeah, it's a
weird things can still happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'd be interested.
I have it on good authority that height does not measure heart. So
does it measure fastball velocity though?
Ask Marcus Stroman.
Okay, yeah, I'll make sure to do that next time I run into him at the deli.
Yeah.
So now we're at the position players, which is where I think
that's the more interesting conversation, right? And the more relevant conversation.
Yeah. So, sir, for just to like set the table here, the Mets right now are missing Cano, who they probably won't get back this year. Nimmo, who probably isn't anything this season. Lowry, who probably isn't anything this season, and McNeil, who should McNeil should be back soon, but I'm like 70% sure the Mets are going to rush him back too quick. He's going to get hurt again and then miss the rest of the season.
Yeah, that's definitely in play.
Yeah, so like,
especially with Davis getting hurt or re-injuring the calf.
I swear to God,
I could very easily see this happening.
just the illogic of it all, right? Because if you want to pinch hit with Davis and just tell him walk to first base, fine. Like, I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
But that you're going to make him
leg injury.
Right, you're going to make him run the bases, which therefore implies that you want him to play the outfield the next inning.
Just think it's not a good idea to have a guy whose leg is hurt run.
What are you doing? Just put Rosario out there. He's fine.
Yeah. But so we've established there's a need for position players.
Yes.
I guess we'll start again with Dilson Herrera, podcast concern. Dilson Herrera.
call Dilson up, right? Like, he's hitting a triple A.
He's having a great year in triple A. Like, he's hasn't been god awful in limited big league time over three seasons in his career. He's still just 25. I have a much easier time looking at 25-year-old Dilson Herrera and thinking, hey, he might figure it out for a little bit than 29-year-old Ruben Tejada anyway, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd roster both.
I would roster both. I would roster probably, since we've established they have at least five roster spots that they can very easily upgrade. Mm-hmm. I would roster a few of these guys we're going to talk about.
Yeah, maybe at the end of this we can talk about like our optimal roster construction.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any reason that Herrera shouldn't be on a plane to New York City right now take a roster spot, like right now.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all on the same page on that one. You put Rene Rivera here, which I think is really interesting. Do you think Rivera is better than Nito?
I don't know, but I think he's probably going to get called up.
He'll definitely be like the third catcher.
Because they typically like to do a third catcher.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine.
When rosters expand. I think it's definitely within the fudge factor, Rivera versus Nito. Like, I don't think Nito is that good a defender. Where you really want his bat in the lineup often.
I wonder if, like, I know Rene has had a reputation as an elite defender for a while. I wonder if it's slipped at all.
I think he's probably not. I think Nito's probably the better defender by a not insignificant margin at this point in their respective careers.
Mm-hmm.
But if Rivera isn't really like a complete black hole at the plate, it's more of like a traditional backup catcher where he might run into a dong every now and then. I think just having the three of them, like, if you're cutting into Nito's at bats with like anyone, I think that's
I will say
semi-valuable.
Baseball Prospectus has Nito as one of the more valuable framers in baseball.
What's his total warp though?
Hmm?
His warp, total warp.
Not good. It's not good, Ken. It's 0.3. He's a replacement level catcher. His DRC is 61.
Yeah, I mean, I basically, when you have one replacement level dude on your bench, I think, and there's nothing really to lose from adding another one, I think having two and hoping one goes on a run where they're a little above is probably a good idea. You know?
Yeah, and like Rene Rivera is a fine backup catcher. I'm shocked he doesn't have a major league job, honestly, given the state of catcher in the current MLB landscape.
He's also been like roughly a league average hitter, like as recently as last season.
Yeah, I don't get it.
So who knows?
I'd be fine giving him a shot. Absolutely. Arismendi Alcantara is an interesting one. Like, we can lump these three outfielders together: Gregor Blanco, Rajay Davis.
And they all more or less do the same thing.
They're all kind of bad with the bat. They all can run. They all can play the outfield. I don't know that any of them are meaningfully different than Aaron Altair, but I'm willing to try.
Yeah, back to the same thing we said about Rivera and Nito. If you have one bad option, sometimes a good idea is to bring in a couple of other questionable options and hope one of them emerges, you know?
Yeah, bring in Rajay Davis as the Aroldis Chapman specialist. and I think they'd bring more speed off the bench, which would be a nice element.
Yeah, we haven't really had that in a while.
It'd be good.
Yep.
Really, I just am tired of watching Aaron Altair.
Yeah, me too. There's literally nothing he does
since when is he like an above average center fielder? Is he actually a good center fielder? I remember him being a corner outfielder for the Phillies who they've pushed into center field.
Yeah, I would say at best he's duplicative with Juan Lagares, and at worst serves no purpose on a roster that already has Juan Lagares.
He's like a scratch defender in center field. So why the hell are we talking about him like he's an above average outfielder?
Yeah, I don't know. Never made sense to me.
So I think all these guys could come up anytime soon. I think optimally, let's say, and I'm sure speaking for like the short term here. So let's say Davis doesn't need to go on the DL and McNeil's back in a couple days. I would probably release Altair for McNeil, and I'd swap Herrera and Guillorme, because I really like Louis Guillorme. I think he's a cool dude. I love defense, but I want more punch on the bench.
Yep.
And I think Herrera gives you that. So then you'd have a bench of Nito Tejada, Herrera, and I can read Lagares, which isn't awesome, but decent. It's not bad.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have any guys you'd rather see up.
I mean, besides Delson, really. Yeah, he's the only one I really feel strongly about. Rene Rivera, I think, is just an inevitability.
Yeah, absolutely.
Given what they typically do in September.
So let's say hypothetically that Davis does need to go on the DL, or that McNeil needs a longer DL stint, and we still want to get rid of Altair. Which outfielder are you taking first?
I think Alcantara, to be honest.
Yeah, I kind of agree.
I think there is a specific enough skill set that you can leverage it off the bench pretty well. You know, in that you have a guy who, you know, JD Davis gets a base knock with one leg.
Yep.
And you don't want him to run.
Right.
Okay. You have a guy to run for him now.
Right.
So he'd probably be my choice after Dilson.
Yeah. And then just from the statistical standpoint, Rajay Davis, I believe, was hurt recently in AAA and hasn't been good. Gregor Blanco has been even worse, I think. They've both been like 10% below average hitters in AAA. Like, they both might be washed.
And like, this is a spot, it doesn't really like give me the fastest dude, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's not like you want this guy hitting often anyway, you know? Right.
I'm pretty sure I don't want, like, I wouldn't want Gregor Blanco. I would like maybe flip a coin between Davis and Alcantara. Davis might be faster than Alcantara still.
Okay. Like, yeah, that's fair.
I don't know. Like, he's one of those dudes who's just going to be able to run until he's like 55 somehow.
Yeah. Still looks the same as he did like 7 years ago.
Right. Exactly. I think I'd probably go with Alcantara, though. Which is a long way from, hey, we're going to trade Syndergaard for Arismendi Alcantara. those are some times.
Simpler days.
Simpler days before before all the Cubs prospects didn't pan out. So yeah, I think it's Herrera as a priority. Get Altair off the team because he sucks. Get Guillorme off the team because he's redundant, even though we like him, and shuffle the guys around a little bit.
Yep.
Sorry, Louis Guillorme. You can be the backup infielder next year.
Yeah, yeah. This will not have been the last we see of Louis Guillorme.
Right. Like, and if next year, if like in a hypothetical world where Lowry is healthy and you're already using JD Davis as like your super sub / ninth bat that's getting four starts a year, having Louis Guillorme on your bench isn't a problem because you're always going to have one good bat on your bench.
Yep. Like, it's just he can't be the best bat on your
bench. You cannot have Nito, Lagares, and Guillorme on the bench right now.
Right.
It's just too much. And then throw a nice sprinkling of Aaron Altair on top of that.
Yeah, real bad.
Oh, God.
That doesn't even get a not great Bob. I also thought it would be worth, you know, a mildly interesting discussion to talk about some dudes in AA who, if they want pen help, mm-hmm. could possibly provide it. Mm-hmm. Your feelings sad. On Stephen Vilines are well known.
He's been bad this year. He might just be bad.
The magic may have run out. I really hope not.
He's been good at AA. Maybe he's just the kind of guy who can't survive with the AAA ball.
Here's hoping that this is just a blip. He comes back next year. The balls are maybe less juiced.
All right, let me see how he's been. You know, I'm gonna like try to give myself some false hope here. He went back to the minors on the 19th, 6/19, 2019. So since he went back to AA from AAA, he has a 1.75 ERA and 21 strikeouts and 25 and 2/3 innings. It's fine. It's not great. Damn it, Steven. I had so much hope.
You were the chosen one.
Yeah. I mean, we all knew this was going to happen. But,
yeah. But
Tony DeBrell has been bad.
Yeah. Basically, the idea there would be stop pretending he's a starter.
Fair.
I like Tony DeBrell a lot. Steve likes him more than either of us. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, I think he's a reliever long term. And I think if he's sitting 91 to 94 as a starter or 89 to 94 as a starter, maybe he jumps more into that 95 to 98 range. Not 95 to 98, 95 to 96 range as a reliever. You know, there might be something there.
Yep. I could buy that.
So just wanted to mention it. Before him, I made the same argument about Justin Dunn in my AAOP.
Yep. I feel like the Mets oftentimes wait too long to make guys relievers.
Yeah, we're basically I would treat it similarly to David Peterson would also fit in this, similarly to how the Cardinals do that every year with their mm-hmm. top pitching prospects.
Yeah, exactly.
Pull them up, get their feet wet in the bullpen, and then you can either send them back to AAA to stretch back out into a starter.
Please,
next
you're,
year.
You're giving me PTSD to that Adam Wainwright curveball. Don't do
I'm
this
sorry.
To me. Don't do this to me. That's like my second big baseball memory.
Oh no.
Not great, Bob.
Not great.
I don't think any of those guys will see the majors.
No, probably not. And then Kevin Smith would just be like Daniel Zamora to Electric Boogaloo.
I think he has a better chance to be a starter.
Yeah.
But yeah, if we're reaching down to AA for Kevin Smith, something has again gone terribly wrong.
Yeah. I just thought it might be, you know, like
yeah, no, absolutely. It's interesting to talk about.
And I'd rather see new guys than the same guys who, you know, keep coming up and being the same guys.
Yep. So. That's absolutely fair. This was there more than I thought they'd have. I thought this was going to be a lot more rough, and they have some pieces that they could fill out the team with.
Yeah, I mean, there's like There is some legitimate help. I don't know if it's particularly good help, but you could squint and see roster upgrades at like two or three different spots.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
And maybe the Mets should squint.
Just call up Dilson, please. Please. Do it. Do it. All right.
Yep.
So we should probably take our second break now.
Yep. Take our second break. And when we come back, we will continue with, oh, yeah, that guy. So back after this.
Hi, Daniel.
Hi, Amanda.
We get to tell everyone about the new pod, Eater's Digest.
Eater's Digest. That is right. Our brand new podcast. It is available now.
It's everything you need to know about the world of food every week with a little help from the biggest names in the industry and food journalists from the Eater Newsroom.
We're going to talk about everything from the worst things that diners do in restaurants to fake meat. We're going to talk about food delivery tech. We are going to argue a lot about how to best behave in restaurants.
Oh, yeah. Big time. So many things. I mean, there's nothing we can't touch.
Food and politics?
Food and politics, maybe. Yes, food and politics comes up.
Yep.
It might make you laugh. It might make you think. It might even make you hungry, Daniel.
So subscribe to Eater's Digest for free today on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app.
Hey, I'm Neil Patel, editor-in-chief of The Verge, host of The Vergecast. We've been revamping The Vergecast more and more lately, and we're coming out with episodes twice a week, sometimes even a third bonus episode. On Tuesdays, I talk to influential people around the world of tech, like Microsoft founder Bill Gates and other tech execs like the founder of Lime Scooters, the CEO of Beyond Meat. We've also been talking to a lot of reporters and academics about the major pressing policy issues in tech, like Facebook's content moderation, they're not doing great, YouTube's harassment plan, or lack thereof, and whether or not the government should break up Amazon, which... maybe they should. And then every Friday, I sit down with executive editor Dieter Bone and Paul Miller for our chat show. We cover the latest in tech news and product reviews. We bring in our other reporters from around The Verge. That show is a party. You should listen to it. You can hear all that and more if you subscribe to The Vergecast wherever you get your podcast. We'd love for you to listen and join us. So again, subscribe to The Vergecast wherever you get your podcast. We'll see you there.
Welcome back to From Complex to Queens. I'm Ken Lavin. I'm still here with Lucas Vlahos, and we're going to move on to Oh Yeah, That Guy, where we look at a prospect from yesteryear. So Lucas, you want to take it away?
Ken, I didn't close my tab this week. Big news.
I did it.
So my Oh Yeah, That Guy this week is someone I had never heard of, so it really wasn't an Oh Yeah, That Guy. It was, who the fuck is this guy? So it's a pitcher, right-hand pitcher, Scott Moviel? I don't know. So he was drafted by the Mets in the second round of the 2007 draft from St. Edward's High School in Lakewood, Ohio. He's a big, and I mean big, high school pitcher, like 6'9". Fangraphs has him listed at 240. I assume he was a lot lankier when they drafted him and just kind of filled out over time. So probably just a big upside play on raw talent and big stuff that they expected to come. He spent 2007 to 2011 in the Mets system, and he never made it out of Advanced A, unfortunately. He was good in a couple brief stretches. So in 2007, he got into rookie ball games and had a 3.38 ERA, 8.3 K9, 2.5 BB9. So that's like a good major league debut. But he was never really able to recapture that level of strikeout stuff. Surprisingly, like given that profile, big, tall, high school right-hander, you would expect lots of strikeouts and lots of walks. He really wasn't that. He never struggled with command a ton until 2010. He walked 4.5 per 9 that year, and also never really struck out a lot of guys. So it was a different era, of course, where strikeouts weren't as prevalent, but interesting to see him buck that trend. He did have a couple injuries along the way. He had 2009 meniscus surgery, which was, according to things I've read, affected him throughout 2010 as well. And then in 2012, he was suspended 50 games for a positive drug test, never got on the field, and the Mets eventually released him. He pitched in the Frontier League in 2012, dropped off the map for a couple years, and then popped back up in the Can-Am Association for Quebec in 2015, that as a 27-year-old, and then hasn't pitched since. So another high school pitching flameout, it seems.
Yep.
I had never heard of this profile. Guy.
Yeah, neither have I. I hope it's pronounced Moviel.
Moviel?
Yeah, with three syllables. Moviel. Moviel.
Moviel. Okay, I see.
I hope. Yeah. I don't think it is.
Yeah, it's I can figuring out how to pronounce some IE syllable is always impossible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
one of the trickier.
So Steve also did one this week, and I guess we should throw it to him. He's going to be calling in from his remote underground bunker somewhere in Tennessee.
Yeah, so I guess take it away, Steve.
Hey, everybody, this is Steve Seipel, and last week I was down in Tennessee, but now I'm a bit further north. Right now I'm sitting on a rocking chair looking out over at the confluence of the Potomac and Shenandoah Rivers over in Harpers Ferry, West Virginia. And it's a very peaceful, scenic place, very good for contemplation, which is the perfect setting for Oh Yeah, That Guy. So this week, Oh Yeah, That Guy is going to be Corey Vaughn, who from August 11th to August 17th, 2012, hit 300, 333, 850 with two doubles, three homers, and three stolen bases for the St. Lucie Mets. And he did all that with a 231 BABIP, so that's pretty good when you're able to hit 300 with that small BABIP. So Vaughn, for anyone that doesn't know, is the son of Greg Vaughn and a cousin once removed of Mo Vaughn. So Greg was a full-time All-Star, and Mo's a three-time All-Star and MVP, so obviously there were some pretty big expectations for Corey. He went to school at Jesuit High in Carmichael, California, and he excelled at all the sports that he played. He was the MVP of his basketball team. He put up really good numbers in football, and obviously he was really good at baseball. In his senior year, he hit 330 with six homers and 19 stolen bases, and the Phillies liked what they saw, and they selected him in the 43rd round of the 2007 draft, which would make him the 1,280th player selected overall. But clearly he's a man of taste and culture, and he didn't want to be a Philly, so he honored his commitment to San Diego State University. And he wasn't really that great in his freshman year at the Aztecs, but he had a pretty good sophomore year. He hit 328, 410, 549 with 10 homers and 15 stolen bases, and was also pretty good in his junior year. He hit 378, 456, 606 with 9 homers and 15 stolen bases. So that June in the MLB draft, the Mets picked him with their fourth round pick, and they eventually signed him for $240,000. And at the time, scouts and evaluators and baseball people in general thought that that could be a pretty big steal, since Vaughn really did have the potential to put up big time numbers and really rocket through the system. So he started his professional career that summer, 2010, and he definitely put up big time numbers. He played 72 games at Brooklyn, and he hit 307, 369, 557 with 14 home runs. Now, home runs at MCU Park are a bit easier for right-handers than they are for left-handers, since they don't have to fight the Atlantic wind coming in from right field. But 14 homers is still a pretty impressive number. Frank Corr, he had the prior record of 13 homers, which was set in the Cyclones' inaugural 2001 season. And that stood for about 10 years until Vaughn broke it. And now Vaughn's has stood for about 10 years, so maybe someone's going to break his record soon. Travis Tyrone is the one that has come the closest. He hit 9 homers in 2011, but nobody has really come particularly close since then. Ross Adolph, last year he hit 7. Joe Ginord currently has 8. He might add a few more, so, you know, it looks like Vaughn's record is going to be sticking at least for another year. So he got promoted to Savannah to start the 2011 season, and he hit well there, but things kind of fell apart when he got promoted to St. Lucie mid-year. In 68 games with Savannah, he hit 286, 405, 408, not bad. In 63 games with St. Lucie, he hit 219, 308, 395, not good. He repeated St. Lucie in 2012, and it looked like all was well again, and he corrected himself when he hit 243, 351, 463 with 23 homers and 21 stolen bases. You could live at the low average when he's drawing walks and getting on base, slugging and stealing, but unfortunately for Vaughn, that year would pretty much be his high watermark. He started the 2013 season with Binghamton, but he had an up and down year because of some injuries. So he started, he repeated in Binghamton in 2014. And he didn't hit particularly well there again, but he got a promotion to Las Vegas anyway because they needed an outfielder. And a lot of times going up to the PCL, you'll get an offensive stat boost because of the environment, but that didn't really happen with Vaughn. In the 65 games he played there, he hit 228, 326, 386 with seven homers and seven stolen bases. He started the 2015 season there, and he was really hit with the injury bug bad. He went on the DL 5 different times, and when he was able to be on the field and play, he wasn't particularly good. And then that October, the Mets gave him his release. So he signed with the Diamondbacks the next March 2016, and they were slated to send him to their AAA team, the Reno Aces, but they ended up releasing him before the season even started. So he signed with the New Jersey Jackals of the Can-Am League, and he played with them that year. And then he signed with the South Maryland Blue Crabs of the Atlantic League in 2017, and he's been playing with them ever since. And in the 3 years that he's been there, he is a three-time All-Star, and he has a cumulative 256, 357, 444 batting line. So that's pretty good. And then in his spare time, when he's not playing baseball, he's actually been producing music with his friend, and this stuff can be found on Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, all that, under the name F-Type. And I'm not that much of a hip-hop connoisseur, but my brother is, and he has said that they weren't too good. He said that to him, it sounded like they listen to a lot of rap and they kind of have an idea of what to do, but they're not artists. But whatever, you know, good for them for trying. Give them a listen, you decide. But kind of most important, I guess, when you're talking about Corey Vaughn is the fact that he has diabetes. He was diagnosed with it when he was 11, and he has an insulin pump that connects to a catheter in his left glute, which is why if you ever like go back and look at the video, when he slides, he always slides on his right side and not his left, because he has the pump in his left side. And obviously, living with diabetes is tough, and the life of a minor leaguer does not help at all. You know, normally you eat cruddy fast food and stuff like that, but with diabetes, you have to be aware of all the carbs and the sugars and whatever else that you're eating. And then normally during games, you play, whatever, but with diabetes, you have to be aware of your blood sugar level, and you have to act accordingly in the dugout or the clubhouse or whatever you are, depending on how you're feeling. So, but, you know, he said to him that it's kind of normal since he's been doing it all of his life. And for anyone that has diabetes, you know, I guess that is true. But as an outsider looking in, you know, that's just another hurdle in the already unnecessarily difficult trials and tribulations.
Yeah, that was Steve Saipa talking about a prospect from yesteryear.
Come back, Steve.
Yeah, come back, Steve. We need you.
It's been like real. I think both of us have also had a couple hectic weeks. It's been this time off has been very poorly timed, Steve. It's unacceptable. He's our boss.
He is our boss. He's our fearless leader. He braved 95 South to go down to South Carolina for us.
He braved the summer mid-eastern, whatever you call that part of the country, weather. I'm sure it's been a humid hell.
Described a terrifying thunderstorm.
Oh man, I bet
there's in a place where thunderstorms are apparently much more dangerous than where both of us are currently situated.
You should have seen when I went out to California for undergrad, none of them knew what a thunderstorm was, and we had like the tiniest little thunderclap once, and everyone lost their shit. I'm like,
really? That's like not a thing in California?
Not in Northern California, no.
That's
it was like
wild to me.
It was like, guys, are you kidding me? This is like nothing.
This happens every day in Florida.
This happens every day in New Jersey during the summer. Anyway.
Yeah.
Thunderstorms are more extreme. Steve survived them. He'll be back next week.
Yep. Hopefully we'll have some good Appy League content to discuss.
Excellent content.
So yeah, I guess that'll do it for us here at From Complex to Queens. Once again, I'm Ken Lavin. You can find me on Twitter at KenLavin91. I've been joined by Lucas Vlahos this week, who Lucas, where can people find you?
LVlahos343.
And next week, we will be rejoined by our fearless leader, Steve Sipa? Saipa?
Whatever.
Did I do it again?
Probably.
Saipa. I got it this time.
Mm-hmm.
Who is at Steve Saipa on Twitter. You can email the show at fromcomplextoqueens@gmail.com. And please remember to rate and review the podcast in the Apple Podcasts app or wherever you get your podcasts from. Really helps us out, and we really would appreciate it. And love the Mets.
Call up Dilson Mets.
at Mets, call up Dilweed Hernia. That's the episode name, by the way.
Excellent.
Dilweed Hernia. All right, that'll do it for us. Love the Mets, love the Mets.
Are you troubled by strange hockey trades in the middle of the night?
Do you experience feelings of dread about NHL free agency?
Have you or your family ever seen a New York Islanders game?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your mobile device and subscribe to Lighthouse Hockey Podcast from SB Nation today.
Our courteous and efficient hosts are ready to serve all of your Islander needs and worries.
Lighthouse Hockey Podcasts for New York Islanders fans.
Hi, I'm Amanda Clute, editor-in-chief of Eater.
And I am Daniel Janine, a producer here at Eater.
And we are here to tell you about our brand new podcast, Eater's Digest.
Every week on the show, we dive into the weirdest, funniest, and most important stories in the world of food.
With the inside scoop from the biggest names in the industry and expert insights from the Eater newsroom.
It's a really fun time, so I would say subscribe to Eater's Digest for free today on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app.